But we begin our program tonight by welcoming back to our program Philip Weiss, co-editor of the online news and commentary website Mondelēz. And Philip, thank you so much for making time to come on the program.
My pleasure. Thank you, Scott.
Tell our listeners a bit about Mondelēz and the work that you do there.
It's a 12-year-old website that covers the Israel-Palestine issue largely from the American perspective, and it's rooted in a progressive Jewish tradition, but our values are very universalist and welcoming, we like to think.
Yeah, no, I'd certainly advise our listeners who are interested in Middle East issues to check out the website. They'll get some great commentary from this country and from Israel and from all over. As I'm sure all of our listeners realize, last week, Donald Trump and his administration broke with longstanding U.S. policy and announced his administration's recognition of Jerusalem as Israel's capital, setting off protests in Israel, occupied Palestinian territories, nations across the Middle East and around the world, including here in the United States. Trump has pledged to move the U.S. embassy from its current location in Tel Aviv to Jerusalem in the coming years. Philip, maybe you can review for the significance of Trump breaking with this longstanding policy, not just of the United States, but a large coalition of nations across the globe.
Yes, well, Trump is certainly a disruptor, as he's been a disruptor in a lot of ways, and this announcement was one of his most disruptive. Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu went to Europe today and tried to sell all the European nations on following suit and saying that Israel's capital is Jerusalem, and they all said, no way. So far, Trump is pretty alone here, and he does break with the tradition that Bill and George Bush and Obama observed, which was we're keeping the embassy in Tel Aviv. In Bush and Clinton's case, they both ran on the promise to move the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, and then wiser heads prevailed. In Trump's case, that has not been he has followed through on a campaign promise that he made to the Israel lobby group AIPAC, and it's hard to say that, as disruptive as it is, it's not as if it doesn't reflect the reality, which is that Israel has devoured Jerusalem. It's been devouring Jerusalem since 1967 when it reclaimed the eastern half, or to claim the eastern half of the city after this 1967 war, that the world has regarded that as an occupation. And the United Nations has repeatedly called it an occupation, and Trump's decision means that the United States doesn't regard Israel as occupied, and it's a huge blow to the two-state solution. But again, going back to the reality that Trump cited and that Netanyahu has cited, the reality is that Jerusalem is in Israel's hands. So he is recognizing a reality, and in that sense, he has blown away the hypocrisy of American presidents, American administrations insisting that we're not going to move our embassy there, but on the other hand, we're not going to do anything to stop Israel from devouring Jerusalem, East Jerusalem. And so the damage to the two-state solution is what Israel and the Clinton administration has done, what the Bush administration has done, what the Obama administration has done. And Trump is, in a sense, sort of simply acknowledging the failures of the American government to do anything to stop the Israeli settlement project.
As you said, Trump and Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu insist the U.S. move here in recognizing Jerusalem as the Israeli capital is just a recognition of facts on the ground. But they maintain that this move by Trump will not derail U.S. efforts to initiate a new round of peace negotiations between Israel and the Palestinians. How much credibility does that statement have?
It has no credibility whatsoever for me. And in fact, I think that's one of the things that enrages, is most angering about this announcement, the claim that you can pursue a peace process when you have already ceded central issues in what is to be negotiated to one side. And that is what Trump did. That actually, of course, is what previous administrations have done. But when Netanyahu says that, when he says, hey, this in no way forecloses a two-state solution, all he's trying to do is to keep Israel from being delegitimized in the eyes of the world. Because Israel wants it both ways. It wants to control all the territory, and yet it wants to claim that it's working toward a two-state solution. And when one prop of that sort of delusion is removed, i.e. you're not working toward a two-state solution, then the world has to move on and say, hey, this is apartheid. There's a struggle for equal rights going on here. Israel controls all the land. And the last thing that Netanyahu wants is for such a sort of international South Africa delegitimization campaign to begin. So he has to say, No, we've got the two-state solution alive. It's alive and well. And in fact, his cohort in the United States, the Israel lobby, the right-wing Israel lobby, is saying, no, is two-state solution is still right on the table. And they do this even as they know that they're not going to make any effort to bring that about. Promises that were made in Oslo and in the Oslo process a quarter century ago have been demolished. And the Palestinians have only seen less and less sovereignty over those years.
With Trump's declaration on Jerusalem, what are the repercussions, in your view, for the United States and Israel in terms of political and diplomatic isolation, the violence that we've seen crop up in places like the occupied West Bank and other regional capitals? What's the blowback for Trump and Netanyahu?
One has to begin by saying that I'm sitting in an armchair in New York, and presumably you're somewhat comfortable there in Connecticut, and we're not going to suffer, hopefully we would not suffer violence that's going to flow from this, but there will be violence flowing from this, and people will lose their lives. A lot of people will be hurt because of this decision. That being said, I think that the international diplomatic consequences of this are actually extremely positive for Palestinians. I don't think Palestinians have ever had as much prestige internationally as they do right now. Because you see even mainstream American voices, journalists who have tended to side with Israel again and again and again, looking at this situation and recognizing the Palestinians are getting screwed. And European countries are clearly very angry about this. Federica Mogherini, the Foreign Secretary of the EU, today made it clear that Netanyahu, we are not acknowledging this. We are, none of us is going to move, none of the European states is going to move their capital, their embassy to Jerusalem. And there's a great deal of sympathy for Palestinians that I think will translate into some real moves on the Palestinian people's part. I don't know quite what entity that will be. It's the BDS campaign. The boycott campaign has been fostered by this move. Whether the Palestinian Palestine Liberation Organization will take its case now to the International Criminal Court, that might be one of the outcomes of this. The PA might collapse. But we are seeing an edifice of 25 years of lies of the Oslo process, in which the Palestinians have been deceived again and again and again, and in which the world has been told, no, they are not a partner to peace. That edifice is collapsing. And now we see that the Palestinians, the end of the story is that they got screwed the other day in Washington, and it just lights up all the times that over the 25 years that they have been lied to. And so I think that there will be a lot of people coming to their side, countries coming to their side, international movements coming to their side, and that will be the good consequence of this decision.
We're speaking with Philip Weiss this evening on Counterpoint. He's co-editor of the online Middle East news and commentary site Mondo Weiss. And I wanted to ask you, Philip, about leadership in Gaza. Hamas and other leaders of the Palestinian people have talked about the necessity of a new intifada or uprising. I wonder if you'd talk about the utility of organizing such an uprising at this moment and how much good it might or would not do.
I guess I'm not really in a position to say. I've read the reports that you have seen. Hamas has called for a third intifada. There are voices in Palestine calling for violent resistance to the Israeli occupation, and surely that will flow from this. There will be some violent resistance. An Israeli soldier was attacked at a checkpoint today in an incident that seems to be related to the Jerusalem announcement. There have been demonstrations across the West Bank and East Jerusalem and in Gaza since this announcement last Wednesday. Some, I guess, there have been some stone throwing and that kind of thing, and most of the violence has been by the occupying Israeli soldiers. I don't know what's going to happen, obviously, and I don't know what the utility of it would be. I guess if it were mine to say, I would say that, look, this is a huge moment for Palestine. Because of the world's sympathy, it's time to marshal world opinion in favor of Palestine and do so at international bodies, at the UN, at the ICC. But, you know, I'm not living there, and there are a lot of people whose future has been sort of shut down for 50 years of occupation in these territories, whose children have not been able to dream of having a real future, of going places, of even seeing Jerusalem, many of them. And I can just imagine how the frustration is just building up there. We quoted someone on our site saying, this is just extending my prison term. This is like living in a prison here. And who am I to tell those people what to do? I would say, yeah, violence is not going to help. The Second Intifada was not good for Palestinian PR efforts around the world. And a lot of people were hurt, too. So I guess I'm hoping that it's going to be a nonviolent resistance, but it's hard to say what will follow.
You know, I wanted to ask you about something that there's been a great deal of skepticism, and that is Donald Trump announced that his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, was in charge of lots of things at the White House, including crafting a new secret peace plan for the Middle East.
Yeah.
With this announcement on Jerusalem, it looks like whatever shred of credibility that may have had weeks or months ago is now shot to hell, I would think. What do you think about Jared and Trump's idea of putting forward a peace plan?
I think it has been shot to hell. There are indications that Palestinian officials will refuse to meet with negotiators from the Trump administration after this announcement. There have been real angry statements released by PLO officials and by the PA, too. And I don't know where Kushner was. There were varying reports saying that Jared Kushner was against this recognition, and yet his family has supported settlements. The Kushner family has funded a settlement on the West Bank, and he has been a dire defender of Israel through the years. He fired me 11 years ago at the New York Observer because I was becoming an anti-Zionist, and he had bought the paper, and he's a Zionist. So he's a very strong supporter of Israel, and there are reports that he supported this decision. But in any case, there goes his peace process. There's not going to be a peace process now. And I think, you know, there are many in the Palestinian solidarity community who see this as a great opening, who say, look, this has been a charade for a long time. Now, at last, the hypocrisy has been removed.
And as you said before, Palestinian leaders have really discounted any role for the United States after this announcement by Trump. Saab Erekat, a longtime spokesperson for the Palestinian Authority, said President Trump disqualified the United States to play any role in any peace process. And he's a guy who speaks for a lot of official thinking within the Palestinian Authority.
Yeah, he's he's kind of the most "quote unquote liberals," people you'll find in the Palestinian scene. He was a supporter of the two-state solution for long after a lot of other people have given up on it. And what you're going to see is that those people in the West Bank, in East Jerusalem, around the world, who see this one-state outcome as the inevitable consequences of Israeli settlement building and Israeli expansion, those people have been given a real shot in the arm, this is the way it looks. Even I'm watching the liberal Zionists in the United States, and honest liberal Zionists in the United States are just filled with despair. They're saying, "Look, we tried again and again. There's nobody in Israeli political leadership who is supporting a real two-state solution." You see, even on the labor side of Israeli Jewish politics, Ehud Barak, for instance, or Tzipi Livni, Barak has celebrated this decision to move the embassy. And so Barak is the kind of guy who you would expect to say, no, this has to be negotiated. And he can't say that because all of Israeli society, Israeli Jewish society, loves this. It's a Zionist society. Zionism has formed the society, and Zionism holds at its core that the Jewish people have had the quote-unquote Jewish people have had a connection to Jerusalem for 3,000 years. There's no question that Jews have had a connection to Jerusalem for 3,000 years. But whether it's been the capital of the Jewish people, that's absurd. Jews have been distributed around the world. It's a religious faith, and some would say there's an ethnic component in Ashkenazi Jews. But these are people, I'm one of them, who have been in highly successful in the West, and I don't see my capital as Jerusalem. My capital is Albany.
Yeah.
And Washington, D.C.
Right. Philip Weiss, I wonder if you'd comment on how much do you think U.S. domestic politics had to do with Trump's decision here, given his really remaining support in the U.S. political scene from Christian evangelical groups and individuals, as well as pro-Israel donors like billionaire Sheldon Adelstein. You also have Democratic Party officials like Senate Minority Leader, New York Senator Chuck Schumer, who supported this move as well. But how much do you think, particularly supporters of this announcement of Jerusalem being officially recognized as Israel's capital, had to do with domestic politics?
I think it had everything to do with domestic politics. I am not an expert on evangelicals. I don't tend to think that they have much influence over this. I might be wrong. I certainly know the American Jewish community, and I can tell you that the American Jewish establishment, the pro-Zionist community, has been very supportive of this and has been pushing this for a while. So you see people like Chuck Schumer, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, celebrating this decision. You see Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton, Tom Perez, Joe Biden saying nothing about it. You know, you would expect them to condemn it as an insult to the peace process. No, the Democratic National Committee platform last year said, hey, Jerusalem is the capital of Israel. So Democrats are really on board with this, I think, to a large degree because they need Jewish support in the Democratic Party, and by and large, American Jews are supportive of Israel. Now, in Trump's case, some say that it's because of Alabama. I just find that hard to believe. I think that you should look right at his largest donor, who is Sheldon Adelson, who has made this a cause of his, the casino mogul, who gave upwards of $25 million to Trump last year. Sheldon Adelson has made this his cause for 20 years nearly. During the Oslo process at Camp David, they were close to dividing Jerusalem in those talks between Bill Clinton, Ehud Barak, and Yasser Arafat. That alarmed Sheldon Adelson, and he started a group called One Jerusalem, determined to keep Jerusalem from being divided. And when George Bush won, members of One Jerusalem ended up in the George Bush administration. So Sheldon Adelson had influence then, and he has influence now in this Republican administration. And that's what is obvious and plain to me. As for the evangelical piece, I know that they, some of them, I don't know that many evangelicals. I know some of them support Jerusalem being the capital of Israel. But I can't imagine that it was that important an issue to the voters of Alabama.
Gotcha. Philip, there's so much more to talk about,
yes.
But we really do appreciate you making time to talk about this important issue this evening with us here on WPCAN. And leave our listeners with Amanda Weiss' website so they can get
sure.
a look at your articles over there.
Yeah, thank you so much, Scott. It really has been a pleasure, and I'd urge them to check out Mondo Weiss, or Mondo Weiss, pronounce it however you like, .net, and MONDOWEISS. And again, we're a website devoted to kind of a progressive view of the Israel-Palestine issue in America and in the world. So, good night.
All the best to you for the holidays. Thanks, Philip.
Appreciate it. Same to you.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
That's Philip Weiss, co-editor of the online Middle East news and commentary website, Mondo Weiss.